Total Clearance, der Snooker-Podcast mit Kati Hartinger und Christian Oehmicke.
Hallo und herzlich willkommen zu einer Sonderausgabe von Total Clearance, eurem Snooker-Podcast aus Deutschland. Ja, mein Name ist Kati Hartinger und ich habe mich mal wieder verquatscht, diesmal mit Paul Collier, der ja das WM-Finale schießt und danach seine Schiedsrichterkarriere beendet. Als Turnierdirektor bleibt er uns aber zum Glück erhalten. Paul kenne ich jetzt schon eine ganze Weile und deswegen sind wir so ein bisschen ins Plaudern gekommen über natürlich diese WM, sein grandioses Auftaktmatch, die anstehenden Änderungen im Snooker, aber auch die Entwicklungen der letzten Jahrzehnte und ein paar interessante Insights zum Live-Scoring. Ihr wisst ja, das ist unser Lieblingsthema hier bei Total Clearance. Also viel Spaß jetzt mit dem Interview mit Paul und danke schon mal an Paul, dass er sich die Zeit dafür genommen hat. Paul, thank you so much for taking the time to be on our little podcast. Your final World Championship as a referee has just started. How are you feeling?
I'm a little bit sad, I suppose, that it's the last one, but I love the World Championship. You know, it's great to be here again. It's nice to have done as many as I have, and I've got one more left in me. So, looking forward to it.
Were you happy when you heard that you were going to get the final, your last time round at the Crucible?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we've been talking for quite some time with World Snooker. Obviously, I've got a full-time contract and I work part-time as tournament director and very part-time as a referee over the last few years. So it was a case of tying things up. You know, they said it wasn't really working for them when I wanted time off the referee tournaments, because the problem they've got is there's only two or three of us that are trained up as tournament directors. But if they need a referee, they can pick the phone up, and we've got a lot of very good referees we can get at very short notice. So they basically said, look, you know, you've had a good career. Would you consider making the move now and going into the office full time? And that was the reason I came back, you know, back after the little break I had. The reason I came back was to be a TD. And I thought, well, we've been talking about it on and off for a few years, and I just think the time has come now. It was getting a bit inconvenient when I wanted time off, and we are a bit short-staffed. So, yeah, that was the deal. So I agreed to go. I didn't expect to get the World Final out of it, mind. You know, I did say I'd like to do one more Triple Crown final before I finished. And then I hadn't done that this season, which I was a little bit disappointed about. But then I got the phone call and said, well, you're going out with the big one. So, yeah, it was great news.
It was great news for all of us. So who makes those phone calls?
That one came from Nigel Oldfield, I think, who's the director of operations for us, you know, so there'd be a few people involved. I mean, the selection for the final of the world referee goes down, on normal years, goes down to the assessors. Mm-hmm. So that would be myself and Jan Verhaas, used to be Brendan Moore, and now Leo Scullion and Olivier. We look at the assessments over the past year and how people have done and, you know, what their schedule's been like, how many tournaments they've done. And then we would always put a recommendation to the board, and it's the board that has the final say. So without involving me and asking anybody this year, they went and made the decision. So I'm really pleased they did.
So am I. And of course, I was super excited to see you ref the opening match, as is traditional. It was Luca Bassel against David Gilbert, a cracker of a match. Can you walk us through it a little bit?
Yeah, it was an unusual game, I think. I mean, Lucas started off so well, and I think everybody in the back of their mind has got that Crucible curse thing. You know, it's obviously, it's a fact, it is there. Mm-hmm. I didn't expect it to happen, but, you know, a lot of people commented, because I was quite surprised when Luca came out and didn't have a bow tie on, mm-hmm. and I hadn't been made aware that he had a bow tie exemption, but apparently it's a temporary one because he's currently got a chest infection, which was quite apparent from the interviews yesterday. And once we were a couple of frames in, I could hear that he was coughing a bit, and when he coughed, it was obviously quite painful. So, that was a bit of a shock at the start. But, I mean, you know, the match went well. They both played well. It was an interesting one because I think they both played great and won frames in one visit. And they both missed a lot and, you know, took four or five chances to win a frame. So, for the audience and the people watching, I think he had a bit of everything. I was quite surprised from 9-6 down that Dave Gilbert finished it. But, you know, he played. And that's not taken away from Dave, by the way, when I said that Luca wasn't well. I mean, Dave played great. It was a good match to be involved in. I mean, as much as my feet didn't like it, I do like deciding frame matches. Mm-hmm. You know, 19 frames yesterday was good to be involved with. I mean, the crowd were absolutely fantastic. So.
Did you get a text from Brendan Moore, the king of deciders?
No, not yet. I'm sure I will at some point. I'm hoping I can meet up with him in the next couple of days. I think he's in Sheffield this week, I'm hearing from other people, so because he's mostly based in Brentwood now and comes home on weekends. So hopefully I can catch up with him before I go back home from here. Mm-hmm.
I thought that the atmosphere before the opening session was just fabulous with the standing ovation. I suppose that never gets boring.
No, I think that's one of the things I miss more than anything is, you know, like the big Rob Walker build-ups and the intros. And I mean, I was surprised. I knew we'd planned a big build-up yesterday, but I'm already in the arena, you know. So we've had our walk-in and our introduction, and then when he threw to the live programme and everybody was on their feet, you know, it was a full standing ovation, and it's some sound in there. It was brilliant. Mm-hmm.
Now, when the match started, I mean, as a member of the audience, it's super overwhelming to be at the Crucible. So when Luka made those super chill breaks at the start, I was like, okay, this is a great way of starting the match. Is that something that a referee even considers thinking about during the match? Like, okay, this is sort of an easy, smooth start?
No, not really, because that's Luka for you. You know, if he's confident and he's playing well, he just strokes the balls in from all places. You know, he's very much like Ronnie, like Jimmy used to be back in the day. You know, you've got those sorts of players. So, no, you try not to get too involved in that. You just sort of watch the shots and you know, because that's what you have to adjudicate on, is each shot that's played. So you keep an eye on that and you just see the scoreboard ticking over and, you know, you wait until you shake hands at the end.
And that's what happened after the final frame. So going back a little bit in history, the first time I met you was at a PTC event in Fürstenfeldbruck, close to Munich, many years ago, as we have to say now. So looking back at how snooker has grown over the past years, what are the things that really stand out to you?
Oh, well, there's lots of things. I mean, you know, it was great when we met back at that event. The PTC's got us into different places in Europe, places we never dreamed of going. So, you know, it was great for the fans to see snooker, but it was great for us to go and see these places. So, you know, that was a great thing for us to do a bit of travelling, which we didn't do before. I mean, when I turned pro as a referee in 1992, we went to Blackpool in, I think it was the second week of June, and we left on the first week of September, and we'd played qualifiers for basically every tournament in the season had been played in that block. So a lot of players that had you could pay to turn pro back in those days. I think you paid about £1,000 and you were on the tour. So that season we had over 700 professional players, so you had to get a lot of matches in. So there was 22 match tables for three sessions a day for nearly every day. You know, it was very busy. There were a lot of matches played and nobody left Blackpool. So the difference now is, you know, we've got a lot more tournaments. We go to a lot of places and you know, a season is a season. You know, in Blackpool, if you didn't do very well, I mean, you might have won two matches, say, in every tournament, but you wouldn't have made a final venue. So in September, your season was over until the following May or June. You know, so some players could go back and work part-time, or if they had full-time jobs, they'd try and take like 2 months leave and then they were able to play in that. So I think that's the big difference. You know, I think the standard was still quite high then. I think it's probably a little bit higher now. But, you know, that's where everybody came from, and that's where the improvement started, I think.
Do you miss the PTCs sometimes? Because we fans really do.
Yeah, I don't miss the hard work, because they used to be quite tricky for us, because, you'd get on a plane on... What I used to fly on a Tuesday and fly into somewhere. And then from Wednesday morning, you know, we install all the scoring kit as tournament directors. That's our job. So you're building all the televisions up, all the stands, running in the cables. And of course, they were so popular because we had amateur days as well. It ended up, rather than having a clear day to just work in the venue, we had amateur matches going on around us, and that took us more time. And then we were de-rigging as we went. You know, when we got to the last 16, you've got eight tables. Suddenly you get to the quarters, you're trying to get four tables out as quick as you can and get them back on the wagon. And so, there was a lot going on. They were very busy. I mean, I miss the events because they were good fun. You know, we haven't played one for a good few years now, and I'm 53, so I wouldn't want all the physical side of it again, I don't think. But if they ever did them again, I'd certainly like to be involved in just, you know, at the desk and running them. Yeah, definitely.
Well, they also came with a very unique schedule that often was, you know, kind of destroyed as the day went along.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I was glad I didn't really referee. I think I only refereed one of them, maybe. You know, it was hard for the refs. There's a lot of best of seven matches to be played over 3 days. You know, the Fridays and Saturdays used to be killers. At least on the Sunday, you knew where you were. But yeah, there was a lot of scheduling to be done. Obviously, with TV coverage as well, they want as many matches as they can get. And it's a very hard thing to look at a match and think, oh, that looks a bit one-sided. We'll put that on TV, because nobody wants to see a one-sided game. But if we can get six matches in a day rather than four, we always try to do it. So, and second-guessing results is always a bad thing to do. So, yeah, they were good fun. They were big scheduling. There was a lot of logistics with, you know, flights and trains and the places we went. But I really enjoyed it. It was part of my life that I'm proud of, and I don't regret a minute of it.
glad to hear that. So working as a tournament director, looking in from the outside, it often seems like you're herding cats a lot of the time. So what's the fun part about the job?
I don't think there's a fun part at all. No, it's just about, again, it's logistics. You know, you look at the event, you try and schedule the matches, you know how many sessions you've got, you know how many tables. And you're keeping an eye on that, basically. I mean, I think we're lucky as TDs. We've got a very good team around us. You know, the referees will, you sort of give them a plan and say, here's what needs to happen today, and they will go off and make a lot of it happen for you. And then you're there, really. You're only called on if there's a problem. You know, you have to make the quick-fire decisions when decisions need making. So that's the difficult part of it, because normally when there's a decision, somebody's going to be disappointed with it and somebody's going to be happy. And, you know, you don't like disappointing people, but we have to make the tournaments run. We have to make them fair. And that's the main part of the job, really.
Mm-hmm. I have to say, I really admired your work when we were in Nuremberg and all the live scoring troubles kept happening. And so it's not been an easy season for you, right?
No, it's all settled down the last 2 months, I suppose. I mean, you know, we're working with a very good company who came in to rewrite the scoring software, and they're completely separate from the company with the website, and obviously both have had their issues. They're well publicised, so I won't go into all that. But yeah, Nuremberg was a particularly tough one. It was down to the network within the venue. We were led to believe would just work perfectly, just plug in and, you know, there'll be your network on the other end of a box. And unfortunately, when we weren't sending much data on the days we tested, that was the case. But as soon as there was matches being played, we had 7 tables in play, there were lots of buttons being pressed and a lot of data flying through, and the internal structure just couldn't handle it. And it was something that we couldn't resolve quickly because we were in a different country. We had some kit in the UK that might have bailed us out. We don't know whether it would have for definite, but we didn't really have time to get it out there and find out. And yeah, that was stressful. I mean, it was hard for us, but I mean, it was harder for the players and the referees because they were the ones who were really under it. Yeah, those are the challenges that we get, you know, but they're things you have to face and things you have to overcome.
And you said you feel like things have calmed down a little bit, at least on your part of the scoring system over the past couple of months?
Yeah, I think our network's a lot better now. We understand it a lot more. We've brought a network expert in who understands it, and we sort of let him get involved in every venue now, even some of the venues he will go in 2 or 3 months before. It's particularly venues we haven't been to, because we learned from Nuremberg, you know, with a new venue, you can't take everybody's word for things. And I'm not saying that they were giving us the wrong information. They probably hadn't tried it in the way that we used it, you know, and we all found out that didn't work. But yeah, it's settling down. I think the scoring system works very well. You know, we're on Bluetooth handsets now that work a lot better, that the referees are using if we don't have a marker. It's a very different system. I think that the whole handshaking process, if you like, between the scoring system and the website, that seems to be a bit more stable. Mm-hmm. I know that people still aren't happy in general about the way it's done. Yeah, but, you know, these are things that people are addressing now. I mean, we had to get the basics right before we could do anything else. Mm-hmm. And getting the basics right, unfortunately, took probably 6 months longer than we ever dreamed it would have. So, you know, it's these things are sent to try us. You know, I'd like to think we're getting there, and hopefully it will improve. Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of change happening in snooker at the moment, obviously, and even more talk about future changes. And one of the stories going around this week has been to sort of rebuild the crucible, maybe. So just, you know, daydreaming a little bit, if you could rebuild anything in this super legendary venue, what would it be? An indoor spa for the referees?
Oh, I don't know. If you wanted to add something, I just think like something, a nice practice room would be good, you know, because the players don't have the best conditions backstage, and that's not for the want of trying. You know, Sheffield Council have spent literally millions on this place over the years to give us what we want, and we are just stuck for room. I don't think it needs anything that it hasn't already got. Maybe the bits it's already got could be a little bit bigger or improved a little bit. But no, generally, I think it's good. You know, we've got a referee's dressing room. There's a couple of lounges that we can use. It's my biggest concern is if they did do. I mean, Barry told me years ago he just wants Sheffield to go and build a new venue, which is a wonderful idea. But where are you going to put it? Because if it's not in the centre of Sheffield, it isn't going to work. I don't care what anybody says. You know, that's what this place is all about. You walk out of any door in the building and you're on a main street with cafes, bars, restaurants, hotels. Everything you want is around you. There's access to public transport. People have got mobility issues. You know, you've got everything here. So it would be great to build a bigger one, give us a bigger arena and give us a few more rooms. But, you know, you've also got to make it work.
Oh, absolutely. And as a fan, I couldn't agree more about the fantastic location. You got the Winter Garden right there, yeah. Shopping, restaurants, hotels, everything. So that's really perfect.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure if you're aware, but Rolf Kalb, our German Eurosport commentator, is also retiring after this World Championship. So this has been sort of a big thunderstorm in the German snooker community. How has your experience been with Rolf?
Oh, I love Rolf to bits. As soon as I saw he was retiring, I sent him a message straight away and we had a little conversation. And I'd be sad for him to finish. You know, he's always been there whenever I've been involved in events in Germany. You know, we get on very well. And obviously his wife Monica had some health issues and we kept in touch over that. And Rolf had a few himself. So, no, he's been a very good friend of mine off the table as well as on the table. So I'm going to miss him a lot, even though I don't follow the German coverage and I don't speak German for his commentary. But, no, he's been a big part of the game for us and he will be missed.
Well, he said the same thing about you when he was a guest in our podcast a couple of weeks ago. Something that he also mentioned then, we asked him about his high and low points during his career, and he was very clear about the low point being the death of Paul Hunter. And I know that has been very emotional for you too. So would you like to honor Paul with a couple of words in this goodbye podcast for you?
Yeah, sure. And it goes a little bit beyond Paul. I mean, we all miss Paul. You know, that was absolutely tragic what happened to him. And, you know, it hit all of us very hard. It made us realise that, you know, there's a lot goes on that we just don't know about. But, you know, you mentioned the PTCs. Well, of course, Paul's manager and his best friend, Brandon Parker. We've also lost Brandon in that time from a very similar illness, which is just, it's uncanny and it's very unfair. But, no, I think Paul would have been, he certainly would have won a world title, if not several. He was a great lad to be around. He was great company. He was a perfect gentleman and sportsman on the table. And he was great fun in the pub after a match. So, we all miss Paul, but we also miss Brandon very much as well. I think the game's a better place for the involvement they had in it. That's the main thing, you know, that they've left their legacy, you know, Paul with his playing, you know, with his titles and the things that he did. And also with Brandon with the great things he gave us from the other side of the game.
Thank you. So speaking about legacy, again, I've been talking about your retirement with Rolf, with Mark Selby, with Marcel Eckert, and all of them have been very appreciative of your role in their careers in a way, although that was a very different role for all three of them. Yeah. And especially Marcel mentioned that you have a very particular way of giving feedback that he always really appreciated. So do you feel like a wave of appreciation and love now that you're refereeing your final world championship? Are people walking up to you and telling you those things, or are they just talking to me about it?
No, I'm getting a lot of that, and it's fantastic. I mean, the first match I did at the qualifiers in this was Jack Lisowski and Matthew Stevens. And of course, Jack won and Matthew lost, and I've known Matthew since he was about 13. But as we shook hands, he just pulled me in, and I hadn't really thought about it. But he said, look, just thanks for all the matches you've refereed me, you know, over all the years. It's been great. Have a great final, and I'm going to miss you. And I think that was when it first really hit home that I was finishing, you know, so that was fantastic. But yeah, I've got so many people. I mean, you know, you walk around Sheffield, people always come up, oh, you're the referee, can I have a photo, can I have this, can I have that? And I think nearly everybody said, like, you know, good luck with your retirement, have a great final. So yeah, it's been good, and it's nice from, you know, people as involved as, I mean, I've got a lot of pride as well. I mean, you see someone like Marcel who was quite new to the game at the level, you know, when he came in and I was there as an assessor and a senior referee, and you know, you try and pass on a little bit of help and a bit of advice, and when people with the ability he's got, you know, when they appreciate you, that really means something. You know, that's leaving something behind, and it's more than Marcel. You know, there's a lot of great referees out there, Tatiana, Desi, there's all these people I've tried to work with and tried to help, and you know, if they carry on, and you know, they're going to be the best referees in a few people. Well, they are some of the best referees now, you know, as long as they keep doing it and I feel I've left something behind, then that's great for me.
And I have to say, I'm so grateful that I've gotten to know you over the years, and I'm super grateful for our friendship. So thanks so much for taking the time to be on the podcast. Final question, any plans for the final? Rituals, parties, celebrations?
No, I'll be doing the same thing as normal. You know, I like to get backstage a little bit early, not have anybody around me, just get my head focused, and I'll be doing that again. It's obviously going to be a bit emotional this time, I suppose. You know, I'm going to have a word with Rob Walker and say, don't big it up too much for me, because, you know, I just need to get out there and do my job. But no, I'm looking forward to the party afterwards for definite, because I'm taking things easy here this 17 days. So, you know, I've got some family and some friends up, and I'm looking forward to that, either my first pint or my first glass of wine after, and let it all sink in then that, you know, basically it is over after all this time. But I don't regret anything. I've had a fantastic time, and I'm looking forward to carrying on with the sport I love, with the people I love being with in my new role.
Awesome. So enjoy the final, enjoy the rest of the tournament, and thanks for being on a podcast.
No, you're welcome. Cheers.
Vielen Dank, Paul, für dieses Interview, für die vielen spannenden Geschichten und auch Emotionen, die du jetzt mit uns geteilt hast hier im Podcast. Ich hoffe, liebe HörerInnen, dass euch das gefallen hat, dass euch das den Paul vielleicht auch noch mal ein Stückchen näher gebracht hat. Er war ja doch die letzten Jahre viel hinter den Kulissen unterwegs als Turnierdirektor. Ist aber wirklich einer der tollsten Leute, die man so beim Snooker hinter den Kulissen eben treffen kann. Wir können jetzt gemeinsam Pauls letzte WM als Schiedsrichter verfolgen, uns natürlich besonders auf das große Finale freuen. Wir wissen noch nicht, wer da spielen wird, aber mein Sieger steht jetzt schon fest, das ist natürlich Paul Collier dieses Jahr. Danke nochmal an Paul für das Interview und ja, wir hören uns dann bald wieder bei Total Clearance, dann auch wieder mit Chris, aber diesmal aus dem Crucible, aus dem Presseraum, dort wo die Pressekonferenzen stattfinden und jetzt eben das Exklusivinterview mit Paul Collier sage ich Tschüss hier bei Total Clearance.
Total Clearance, der Snooker-Podcast mit Kathi Hartinger und Christian Oehmicke.